This is The Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joseph Cohen from Queens College in the City University of New York. For more, visit theannexpodcast.com.
This discussion of the impending obsolescence of sociology is making me actually reflective about why I became a sociologist in the first place. Why did you guys become sociologists? I'm curious.
You want to start, Donnell, or shall I?
Sure. So I became a sociologist by accident. I was going to be in business. Everybody knew it. I applied to all colleges, undergraduate institutions that have really good business programs because I was obsessed with – I grew up poor and as working class, right? So my plan was never to go hungry again, right? I was going to pull myself out of poverty and be done with that. And so I thought business is the way to do that. And so I came into college knowing I was going to be a business major, which is kind of unusual when one goes to a liberal arts college like I did, but I'm going to be a business major. I took a social course. I just took a social course because it was one of the general ed requirements. I had to take a course in, let's call it the social sciences, whatever the general ed requirement was. And it didn't even take two classes. I mean, I literally remember the first class thinking to myself, oh, this is neat. And the first book I read was Suicide by Emile Durkheim. And I remember wrestling with the language, but once I got it, I was like, oh my gosh. Now I understand why so many things that went down in my community when people felt a sense of normlessness, why people did what they did. It all made perfect sense to me. And at that point, I thought, this is going to be fun. Business for me was all about the work. What do I have to learn in order to get a good job after I graduate? But sociology, it was about the fun. This is the kind of stuff that I can learn and have conversations with any human being about, with other faculty who weren't even in soc, with my family, because I can sort of switch up. I can use a little code switching and switch up the language and tell a story, using sociological theory, but I could overlay it with, how Slick Rick had that track children's story? Okay, so check it from this advantage, right? And I could do that in such a way that soc was this tool that I could take with me in any conversation, in any avenue. It was fun. It was my hammer. And it was my toolkit that I could use anywhere. And I just fell in love with it. Now, of course, and you guys know this, but I guess the podcast listening audience doesn't, I went into business. I worked for 3 years at a public accounting firm, a really successful one, and I was really great there. But I didn't love what I was doing. I was good at it, but I wasn't enjoying myself. I found myself missing sociology a lot, so much so that I ended up getting, because I was making a lot of money in public accounting, so I ended up getting a journal subscription to ASR and AJS just for the fun of it. That's how much of a nerd I was.
That's
and at that, after doing that for a year, I reached out to my old social professors and I said, I know this sounds crazy, but I think I want to go and get my PhD in sociology. What do you think? And they were all like, yeah, we knew this day was coming. We've already written your letters. We already knew that this day was going to come. So your letters were written right after you graduated. They're just waiting for you. And that's how I became a sociologist.
So Joe, what's your come to sociology moment?
Yeah. I mean, my story might not be as interesting. There is an interesting component. So I as an undergrad, I was in an international business program at a Canadian university, Carleton University. And part of it had a mandatory one-year exchange. And the class was very, very neoliberal, right? And I was a true believer. And I went to the University of Buenos Aires economics faculty for a year. And what was really interesting about the University of Buenos Aires economics faculty was there were two generations. There was those who had gotten their position before the dictatorship, and they went into exile, and they were mostly old social psychologists and org theorists and things like that. And then there was a younger generation who had been Harvard Business School trained, and they're, what they were teaching was very close to what I had already been taught. And I just, I really liked the old guys. I thought they were thoughtful and philosophical and scientific. And I was just really, I really enjoyed talking to them. And I really enjoyed talking to them in a context where I was in Buenos Aires in 1998. And it was a year after a big financial crisis that sort of put the brakes on the neoliberal prosperity that the country had been enjoying for the you know, during the mid-90s. And so it was sort of the experience of meeting all these social psychologists and seeing sort of the failure of the real world failure of a theoretical system that I had learned about and had been taught was going to create this amazing bounty. Watching its failure on the ground sort of pushed me away from economics and towards this discipline.
Huh.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, mine, I think I became a sociologist because of the bell curve, actually.
No.
Yeah, I read that book. I read that book soon, like not that long after it came out, just because I saw all these people reading it. And I wondered what's so great about this book that everyone seems to be reading it. And I remember reading it. And I remember thinking to myself, people still think this stuff. And it's great. Well, apparently they do, because you have these two guys from Harvard who not only wrote the book, but they got it published and millions of people are buying it and everyone's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a political economy major in undergrad, and I was like, I was like, where's the language for me to even start to rip apart this argument, right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, whatever, I can look at your models and I can tell you what I think is wrong with your models, right? But where's the language for why you would try to spin your findings the way that you did, and why your interpretation of your findings seemed to have such traction in the US, like in the mid to late 90s, right? Mm-hmm. What's going on here? And so, yeah, I think that was it. I didn't go into sociology right away. I mean, I had a corporate job. I did Teach for America. And I was going to get a PhD in policy, and then, but thinking, I was just like, oh my goodness, I'm just going to be doing this political economy thing again. And I was like, this doesn't give me the theory that I think I need. And, you know, this is a funny story, actually, a little insider talk. But the one policy school that I was most interested in was the Woodrow Wilson School. Mm-hmm. And while I was there talking to the head of admissions, you know, he said, you know what? I think there's someone you should talk to. And guess who he connected me to? Fred Wary.
Oh, Fred Wary.
Yeah. And so basically Herrnstein and Murray, Fred Wary, and I wish, and Templeton, who I, that's who was the head of admissions for the Woodrow Wilson School at that point in time. Those are the people I have to thank for becoming a sociologist. And actually, frankly, I know that Middlebury wouldn't allow Murray to come and talk, but I'd actually love to have a conversation with him right now. And just, you know, just ask him, like, why did you write that book? Like, do you still think in that way? I mean, I know he says he doesn't, but yeah, I would love to sit down and have a conversation with that man.
If he's anything like his Twitter feed, I don't think it would be that satisfying, to be honest. he sounds like a patronizing. He sounds patronizing, and I don't know. He's not my cup of tea. But I would like to say, if you put Fred Weary in front of any program you're going to sign up, that guy's salt of the earth. So what's the moral of the story here? What is the moral that we draw? Is it that dissatisfaction pushes people to the discipline? Is that what we're to infer?
I don't know. Like for me, it wasn't, I mean, it was partly dissatisfaction, but it dissatisfaction with one thing and understanding that there was like this other place mm-hmm. that I could go to that I was like, oh, mm-hmm. right. Here are the tools. Here's the language, right? Why did I not know what sociology was the entire time I was in undergrad?
True.
You know what's interesting is I always grapple with the question, why are sociologists liberal, but not really, it's not liberal isn't the word I'm looking for, but why do they resist sort of society's established institutions? Why are so many anti-capitalism? Why are so many, you know, not anti, I don't know, nationalism or anti, you know what I mean? They, and I guess maybe the kernel is that you have some type of recognition that the way that things are done is not the way that they need to be done or necessarily the best way. You have a sense of sort of social convention. You have a sense of how like truths are constructed by people and things like that. And you know, maybe that's the draw. That's what brings people in. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, you guys out there, if you have your own sociology genesis tale, you know, yeah. I'm not on Twitter, but go ahead and tweet Gabriel, I should say. He's going to shiv me if I call him Gabe. Go ahead and tweet Gabriel and Joe. And I can call you Joe still, yeah. Right, Joe?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I'd love to hear. I'd love to hear those stories.
I'll tell you what, better yet, send a less than 1 minute audio recording. You've been listening to The Annex, a sociology podcast. For more information, visit theannexpodcast.com. Music is by Lena Orsa. Our production team included Anika Chowdhury and Liseth Moreno. On behalf of the Annex team, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening.